We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no. There's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 381. I got the number wrong last night. I said 381 last night.
I kind of thought you did, but I didn't say anything, so it wasn't
possible. It's a real 381, and what a difference. Oh, we're brought to you by ShipStation.com. Go check it out. What a difference a day makes. The entire atmosphere. There's music going on. People are happy. There's still people here because they actually freaking won.
There's a guy in a recorder over there playing.
We got a guitar, we got a recorder, there's people leaving, there's people going to Billy's to get drunk now. It's a Friday night, people are happy.
Yeah.
Last night was depressing, tonight is happy.
And why is that? Because we hit the ball for one inning.
What's okay,
but
they won
for one inning.
Against Verlander.
Thank God we got to Verlander early.
Yes, Verlander, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, and he was one of the best pitchers in baseball from innings 2 through 7.
Yep.
And thank God he could not find his fastball, and he struggled in the first inning, and they got 4 runs off of him. LeMahieu home run lead off the game. Hicks.
That was a fire. That place went fucking balls when LeMahieu hit that home run.
The place was electric in the first inning. Hicks with the home run off the foul pole.
Huge.
And you're saying, Verlander's clearly frustrated out there. He doesn't have his stuff. And he nutted up after that. You knew he was going to.
How many times have we talked about this in this series and before this series? When you want to get to Verlander, it's not over a 2 to 3 inning period. It's within that half inning. You need to – he's got a rubber arm. He doesn't fatigue when it comes from inning 1 to inning 2 to inning 3. When he fatigues and when he gets frustrated and when you can get him most vulnerable is when you see a piece of the armor going away within that half inning. And they saw the location. The fastball wasn't there. He wasn't able to locate the pitches like he was, so they were able to make good contact, and they got to him in that inning. The last time he pitched, they had opportunities, but they didn't get to him in that one inning, and then he settled down again. Exactly what he did tonight. But the difference, they took advantage of it tonight. Thank you, Aaron Hicks. Because that was a missile off of the pole.
Off the pole.
In the netting of the pole.
It was, they took advantage, but also Paxton stepped up after his rough first inning.
Yeah.
Like, That place and could have easily just died after
it wasn't even
up.
A rough first inning. I mean, so he was behind in the counts in the first inning, but, like, even the circumstances, like, the guys getting on, the Gary Sanchez had problems behind the plate, which is why the run scored as well. So there were other circumstances, but he was falling behind early in the counts. He was down 3-0 to two guys at least in the first inning, and right. Then that continued into the second inning, and then he buckled down. When he got to the bottom of the order, remember we were talking about this? In game, you and I were like, look, he's working ahead. It's to the bottom of the order. Yeah. But still, he's working ahead. Like, he's got to pepper the
zone
early.
Didn't he walk the leadoff hitter after they scored a bunch of runs or in the third inning or something?
Yeah, the leadoff hitter got on. I think it was a walk.
Regardless, he also pitched better as the game went on for him. And that's exactly what needed to happen because it was – you knew Verlander was going to settle in, and he did settle in. So the Yankees got nothing. I think it was two base runners after the first inning.
It was zero base runners for a while.
Yeah. So Verlander clearly settled in. He had a rough inning in the first inning, obviously. Just thankfully, his first inning was rougher than Paxton's rough first inning. If you even want to call it a rough first inning, whatever it was, the place was loud after the first because the Yankees had the lead. And we were at all three games. I was at all three games. You were at the last two games. And the place died in the sixth inning of game four.
Well, and it very well could have been like that tonight because when you're coming out and we know that Paxton struggles in the first inning and he gets behind 1-0 after, again, walking a dude, falling behind in the counts, you're like, here we go again, not hammering the strike zone, not doing what you do, because if he's ahead in the count, then that high 90s fastball plays so much better. Mm-hmm. Then he can mix the pitches up and change speeds, and he's just that much more effective. And you see him out of the gate struggling again, and we know he's had those struggles in the regular season, so I think everybody's on the edge of their seat. Like, let's just get through this first inning and see what happens. But they got to Verlander, and that was the biggest thing.
We talked about where...
Because that LeMahieu home run brought everybody right back into it.
Oh, yeah. We were talking, like, after he gave up the four in the first inning, before we knew he was going to settle in, we're like, if he's struggling in this game, they could just pull him. And
you're talking about Verlander.
Maybe he throws 45 pitches because they're looking ahead. They might punt this game. But they had a chance. They hung around. Paxton, I thought, was good enough. He got them deep enough into the game. That's another thing we talked about during the game. It's like, how far do you push Paxton? Because it's a balancing act now. You want length because you're trying to save your bullpen because there's no off day between 5 and 6. So you're a little bit nervous about going to guys day after day after day because – it's going to backfire eventually.
At some point, it's going to happen. It's going to come back.
So you got to push Paxton, but you also have to – I'm sorry. Our producer here, Ryan Sherman, is showing me something while I'm trying to talk. yeah. All right. He says the first inning reminded of Didi's wild card home run in 17 where the place just erupted after it was a little bit down. Yeah, you got the once you get the crowd involved in
I don't
these
know if
games,
it was to that level, but it was definitely like a fire. Only I think one of the biggest things was that we hadn't seen offense at all.
No one was hitting with runners on base for the first two games here.
We were
at home.
Like jonesing for a big moment.
They were one for 17 with runners in scoring position in the last three games coming into game five. So What I was saying, though, about Paxton, it's a balancing act between pushing him enough in the game where you can save your bullpen a little bit, but you also can't lose the game because that's your season if you lose it. So Boone comes out, and this is something I don't think we've seen all year. He comes out to talk to him, but doesn't pull him.
The gate was open. I was watching the gate in the bullpen. The gate was open.
That was in the sixth inning, right?
Yes, because he got through the sixth, yes.
It was in the sixth inning. Chirinos is up, and... It's not the tying run. So, right. Worst case scenario, he hits a home run, which he hit it to the wall. Worst case scenario, that home run makes it a one-run ball game. Right? It's a one-run ball game, worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Do you think he leaves him in if it's the tying run?
Probably not. But that was exactly what our discussion was, because you and I were talking about this throughout the game. This was probably one of the games that you and I were conversing on like strategy. Like the entire game.
We're nervous the whole
day. I think it was also because we didn't have an event behind us. We were like, doing other things. Like we were like doing pretty much the podcast within the game as well.
Yeah, we were mic'd up.
Yeah, we should have been. But it was a big moment. It was a huge moment. And Boone comes out and the gate's open And everybody's kind of booing. They don't want him to pull him. Because I think we've seen this song and dance before where Boone has come out a little too early. And I think everybody wanted, the crowd definitely wanted Paxton to finish that inning. And Boone walked away and the place went crazy. And it was one of those moments that it was just like, I loved it. I loved that moment. It was awesome. I don't know if Boone kind of orchestrated that moment to fire it up. If he did, freaking genius.
No.
Good. I'm glad he probably did, because he's definitely a TV guy.
I always
don't forget that.
I always find it funny when managers go out and they're going to talk to their pitcher and they ask, "Are you good?"
He knew the decision before.
What is the pitcher going to? No, I know.
That's the thing.
So like, he say, "Oh, I want to go out and talk."
It was drama. He fired up the crowd.
No, I really don't think he was doing it to fire up the crowd.
I do.
Well, that's stupid if that's
well, and let me tell you another thing. Well, because he's going to leave him in, so he's like, "Let's just get this. I'm going to fire." It was a good opportunity to do something. And it was also,
that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
No, it's not, because you know what it also does? What it also does is it fires up Paxton. It gives him the confidence that, you know what, you got to do this. I got you. You're my guy. It absolutely, it works in two effects, to your pitcher, your guy, and the crowd. Boone knows that shit.
He said maybe three words to him.
Exactly.
Are you good?
Yeah. That's all he needed to know. He already had his decision made up.
And no pitcher would ever say, unless they're physically injured, like Sabathia was last
night. But you
know
what it does?
Night,
it gives the opportunity.
They're not going to say no.
It gives Cohen's the opportunity for James Paxton to look into his eyes, into the whites of his eyes, and say, "Yeah, Skip, I'm good."
Uh-huh.
Confidence.
Yep.
And then he grooved the fastball that almost went out of the ballpark.
Yep. That
my stomach was in my toes. I thought it was gone off the bat.
That if it was the
but
middle of
wasn't.
The summer when the balls were still juiced, that ball is seven
or
rows
it was
deep.
Hot out. Yeah.
So whatever.
Or the winds weren't swirling.
Whatever.
Right.
Whatever
or the
reason
their hands
is,
weren't freezing cold.
I think
right.
The biggest decision. I think the biggest reason he was left in is because he was not the tying run. He was the tying run.
I think
run,
that was a very big.
He
part of
he
it.
Comes out of the game. Canley comes in the next.
But
inning.
It was out of character, and I thought that was refreshing.
Canley comes in the next inning, struggles a little bit. And Britton stepped up huge.
He was awesome.
Out of that
He's been
inning
so good
and then
this
pitched
year.
A clean,
underrated
a clean
good
eighth inning. The concern, we're going to start talking about going forward, because at this point it's just scratch and claw until what?
Just quickly, the amount of people that I've seen peeing on the building that I did game one of the ALDS.
You're talking about that again?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just saying it's very routine now.
See, this after is a, this the is a one travesty. Episode you had plausible deniability, now yeah. It's like you're bringing up another episode.
Yeah,
they,
I mean,
know,
I'll never,
they know exactly what building you pissed on.
I will
you
never,
peed on the public restroom in
well, now you're
old Yankee Stadium
it.
Park.
Yeah, and now there's a million people peeing on it.
Yeah, because
it's just, why is the
why is it closed
why
after
are the
Yankees
bathrooms
game?
Locked?
Leave the bathrooms open after a Yankees game.
Just open the bathrooms.
The men's room at a playoff game has lines out the exit and the entrance. It's insane. Like, you want to go pee in a playoff game, you're going to miss an inning. So,
and let me tell you what, when they're walking
they
out of the ballpark and they see that place and they see the big woman and the big man on the door, they're like, "Yes, I have a bathroom." And then you
they're
know
going to get on a train.
You know that feeling when you're like, you know the toilet's close and you're
yeah.
like, "I'm good."
Yeah.
It's there. And then you get there and it's locked. You're like, "Oh, what it's already like your body's already decided what's going to happen."
So,
anyway,
the bullpen, the concern I want to talk about, we're going to talk about the upcoming games. Time to tell you guys about ShipStation. If you're an online seller, listen up. When you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. It's time-consuming, expensive, so many carriers to choose from. How do you know that you're making the best choice? That's why you need ShipStation.com, the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, or your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface, making them really easy to manage from any device, even on your cell phone. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. And right now, Blue Wire podcast listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use offer code BLUE. That's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering credit card information. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in blue. That's ShipStation.com, then enter offer code blue. ShipStation.com, make ship happen. All right, we're back. So you're looking ahead to the next days, no off days. And this is the thing with the bullpen where it's like, how much do you push them versus how much are you
trying to conserve something out of the bullpen to ensure, because you're going to go bullpen day. I think Chad Green's opening in game six. Chad Green didn't pitch in game five. He's most likely going to be the opener, and then they're going to take it from there. I think there's like a rough outline for a plan, but that's going to change whatever depends on like however long Green can go,
yeah,
whatever the score is, like whatever the situation is.
Let's think about the guys that we haven't seen, right? We didn't see Green tonight. We saw him obviously yesterday, gave up that home run. We haven't seen Sessa in a while, and he was good. You know, the biggest impact bats, the guys that have been the biggest problem on the Houston Astros, are the right-handed bats, and Sessa looked good against them. I like that matchup. We haven't seen Hap. We haven't seen Hap much.
I don't like the prospects of Hap.
I don't either.
Versus Springer, Altuve,
but it's also a guy
Bregman.
That can get a little bit of depth. Like, I'm just talking about options possible.
He can go deep, but I don't like that.
If I'm looking at a guy who's deep, I would prefer Sessa, honestly, the right-handed pitcher who can get some more length. He looked good against these guys.
I think he...
So this is Ryan Sherman here. Hey, guys, on Bronx Pinstripes. So if you get through those top guys on the lineup with a Chad Green and then you move it towards a J.A. Happ, who's going to give you the length through maybe the third and fourth, fifth, then you're looking at a situation where you can bridge it to the top-end guys, the high-leverage guys in the bullpen, and then J.A. Happ becomes a guy who's given up, you know, a walk-off home run because he's pitching high fastballs like he does all season into a guy that could give you, like, length in a playoff game.
Yeah.
No, that's right.
I thought you were going to talk.
No, I mean, that's so when you're looking at a guy like J.A. Happ for that reason, you don't want that matchup against the right-handed bats.
No.
You look at him for the guys closer to the – and Alvarez. And Alvarez, because he can't hit a lefty curveball.
I'm not concerned with Alvarez at this point.
Which knock on wood, please, because I feel like that's –
As far as lefties go, Brantley scares me much more than Alvarez.
He's looked very bad again, especially the off-speed stuff.
Yeah.
He's had one hard hit ball
really
a couple nights
off-speed
ago.
Stuff.
Right. But so the thing is when you're looking at Happ, it's not an optimal guy when you look at the matchup, but it is a guy that can get you some length. To me, Sessa's that guy.
Well, Happ can probably go longer than Sessa, but I think what you do is you open with Green and you're comfortable with Green for two innings, right? To get through those right-handed hitters.
Yeah, you want him to get through the two innings.
And then I think you're going to take it from there, inning by inning, depending on the score, depending on the matchups. And you're just going to take it from there.
Let's go!
Now, I asked this question at the game to Scott and JJ. So the Astros are guaranteed a game seven. Like, even if they lose game six, there's game seven. They've got Cole waiting one of these games. I don't think they've announced it as we're recording this an hour after the game. They haven't announced who's pitching game six. If you're the Astros, what do you do? And as the Yankees, what would you rather them do? Pitch Cole game six on short rest or hold him out for game seven? Scott, you go first.
Yeah, so obviously for me, yes, I say obviously because it's very – I have a pretty firm conviction on this. I want to push it to game seven. I want to get to game seven when there's nothing else left. I want the most pressure. I want that game to be at home for Houston because obviously it is, but all of the pressure is on them. They have to – they were down 3-1. This is a big deal if they lose this game. So now the Yankees are playing, I think, a little bit more loose. They're playing just, you know, whatever happens, happens. And the Astros are pressing at this point, at least in theory.
You got to just tell yourself that,
yeah.
Right?
So I want the game – I want this series to go to game seven. That's the bottom line.
No.
But here, hear me out. If Gerrit Cole is pitching game six, that's a problem because I don't know what he's
on. Even on short rest.
I don't think that's a big deal for him.
Why? He hasn't pitched short rest. I don't.
Right.
I
so,
don't
so
know
tell me
when
what
the
he
last
is.
Time he's pitched short rest.
Right. So tell me what he is. I don't know.
We
don't
saw
know.
Verlander struggle short rest.
Everybody
in the ALDS.
Is different. You cannot compare one person to another.
So as a Yankee, as the Yankees, you do not want to see Cole.
I don't want to see Gerrit
six.
Cole until I have to.
Okay. Well. So. Okay.
You're gonna see him in one of the two. You're gonna see him in one of the two games. So
right.
Is it would a you, preference of one?
Would you rather, as the Yankee, you're the Yankees. Would you rather have to face him six on short rest or seven full rest?
I'd rather face him on seven because you know that
you're
could
there.
Maybe, yeah, you know that you've gotten to seven at that point and it's do or die.
Okay. I don't know what the right answer is. Because
well, I mean, you're talking about like short rest and like the theory of short rest makes it better or worse. How many times have we gone over Tanaka's numbers on short and long rest, and there's a wash on all the numbers. Cole's got a rubber arm.
He was not on his A game in game three.
Right.
And
we still couldn't get to
him. Couldn't get to him. And that was on the road. He's been like unbeatable at home. He's been unbeatable on the road.
He's been unbeatable for like 280 days, I think. It is. Something stupid.
I don't think...
25 starts.
If I'm betting, I don't think the Astros start him in game six because they're guaranteed a full rest Cole in game seven and they feel good about that. But I think it would also be desperation on their part if they start him in game six because they're saying, we don't want to go to a game seven. And then if you lose that game, even if Cole pitches well on short rest, but he can only go six innings because he's on short rest and he can't go to the seventh or eighth, and you lose that game, then you're totally screwed for game seven. You have no shot. I think they're going to hold him out for game six. I mean, for seven, which means they're probably going to start the rookie Urquidy. I don't know if I'm saying that right. We'll find out on the broadcast on Saturday night.
They'll probably pronounce it wrong, too.
I think he's going to get the start, and they're going to use their bullpen or their rookie. Like, because what's his
Peacock
name?
Peacock pitched tonight.
Peacock pitched tonight. It was only an inning.
And it was seven pitches, so it really...
Could Greinke be a factor in game six out of the bullpen?
I think at that point, when you realize that they're not going to go game seven and you're in a position where you need to get as many people as possible, then, yeah, you go who you have.
Could they go for broke, the Astros? Say the Astros are up by a run in the eighth inning. Could they go for broke and bring in Cole?
I don't think so. I think they have to have confidence in their bullpen. I think that Hinch has done that all year long, and I think they would prefer to do that. Because that's a huge risk if you're doing that.
See.
And then you are going to a guy that doesn't have any experience in the bullpen at all, and you're trying to get
Ryan's wearing a Sabathia jersey. He got a standing ovation tonight. Sabathia did.
Yeah. He was like, I'm on camera?
So the Astros are still in a power position because they're up 3-2 going home with two games at home. The Yankees are in desperation mode. Whatever, like, they're going to do whatever they have to
do. So we all know Ryan is now pissing on the building.
They're going to have to do whatever they have to do to win. I kind of feel like there was an attitude, at least among fans, of F it tonight. Like, you're down 3-2.
Yeah.
Like,
you got to win. You're playing with house money now. Like, if you lose, it is what it is.
So,
let's go.
Couldn't have gotten worse than game four. Game four was rock bottom. So, the mood, the team, the play, the quality of play couldn't have gotten worse than game four. So, okay, let's see what happens game five.
But the thing is with today.
That's one. Don't let them get one. That's the whole thing that the freaking Red Sox talked about in 04. Don't let us get one.
Don't
let us get one.
The problem, the weird thing that was tonight, and I think one of the big things that we were just like so excited for, is that finally we had an offensive explosion within an inning.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, they got a hit with runners in scoring
position. We had an opportunity to go freaking nuts because of offense. And that hadn't happened. But guess what? After that first inning, we went back to the exact same team.
But it's also Verlander.
I understand that, but we went back to the same team of not performing at all. I mean, they didn't have any opportunities because Verlander was lights out from then on.
But we ran
into that offensive stagnant again. We hit it when they took advantage of the opportunity. The culmination of what happened in the first inning was what could have happened in the series before this, because they had those opportunities and they failed on those opportunities, and today they didn't fail on those opportunities.
But don't you get like less upset about getting shut down by Verlander, but
in game six, number five, an elimination game, no, doesn't matter.
No, had Verlander get they for in an alternate reality, they pull Verlander after game one, after inning one, and then they bring in their bullpen and the Yankees don't do anything, then I'm furious. But Verlander settled in. He's going to do that. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball. If you get shut down by one of the best pitchers in baseball, you know what? That happens.
But guess what? This is not this is game five. We've seen that too many times already. I don't care who's pitching. This crowd, this place cannot handle another offensive stat. Look.
Well, luckily that they held the one run.
Today, they took advantage of the opportunity they have. That opportunity was present in game one. They took advantage. Game two, they did not. Game three, they did not. Game four, they did not. Today in game five, they did. It was all about taking advantage of the opportunity, because the other games, they did not do that. And today they did. That's the series.
Yeah, honking your horn in the parking garage is going to help you get out faster.
But that's the series. It's all about your opportunities and what you do with them.
Last thing I want to talk about is Stanton got in the lineup, replace Encarnacion at DH. He was clearly not running well. He was running down first base line on a ball in the hole. He was jogging at best,
which probably was scripted.
So I think I said the only reason Stanton got in the lineup is because Encarnacion was bad all series. He was struggling, so it's not really a big issue taking him out of the lineup. What are your thoughts on Stanton getting in there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was similar to that. I think it was also like a possible attempt at a jolt of getting Stanton in on this type of game. I know he didn't do anything, but I'm saying
just having for a little while, he was the only one who made out in the first inning.
Having him in the lineup was I think people felt good about that. You know, having the big guy. Yeah, there is a narrative with this.
Yeah.
He had a decently hard hit ball down the line, I think, the third base.
No, that's what we said, where he jogged down the first base.
So,
here's my question to you. Who starts at DH in game six?
It doesn't matter.
Do you plug Encarnacion back in? Do you Encarnacion at first and take Gio out at third, who's looked horrible all series?
Gio has looked really bad at third.
And move LeMahieu to third.
At the plate.
Yeah. So you put Encarnacion at first. Yes, you're losing some defense at first, but even though Encarnacion has sucked all series, like, he's still a good hitter. Just so like Stanton, even though he's still a good hitter. He's still Encarnacion.
As long as Encarnacion is not being held back a little bit by that oblique, because
you might have two injured DHs
right now. The way I'm looking at his at-bats, the way he's flailing on some of these outside pitch, he's just not having the same good at-bats.
He looked healthy in the Minnesota series.
The at-bats don't look like an Encarnacion at-bat. He's a guy that works the count, that has a great eye, that has great at-bats, and he just hasn't had good at-bats.
So
that, to me, is also a guy that's either pressing or somebody who's potentially not feeling 100% and doing different things.
Ryan, you're making, hand markings.
So, to me, I was trying to mention that...
Just watch your thumb on the button.
That Encarnacion is a batter who, he's so talented, 30 home runs in eight straight series and eight straight seasons, but he's also a batter who looks in zones, so he's middle in, and this series that Scott had mentioned, he's flailing at pitches outside, so he's getting away from what he's good at.
He's also not identifying, he's either not identifying him like he normally does, or he's compensating for something because he's not fully healthy.
So to me,
and the oblique thing is 100%. Affects the swing.
So to me, that seems like pressing, which is the same as everyone else in the lineup. It says when the guy in front of you isn't succeeding, when the guy behind you isn't succeeding, you're up there trying to hit a grand slam with no one on base. And so the pressing ends up being a thing where this idea of being a savage at the box, of passing the baton, has now left in the postseason because you're facing better pitching, which of course we are. But we've also seen Verlander, who we could have beaten twice. We've seen Cole, who walked five batters and left nine on base. We've seen pitching that, of course, people always go with the cliche of good pitching beats good hitting, but we've had opportunities and we've missed them. Tonight we succeeded. Aaron Hicks came through in that situation. Yeah, but moving forward, we need to continue in those situations.
Yeah, they took advantage of the one situation basically that they had against Verlander.
Yeah.
So you're making out the lineup for game six.
Yeah.
Are you?
I see. Here's the thing, though. We're looking at Game 6, and we don't know what the hell is happening. We got a bullpen-ing game, so I think when you're looking at the different matchups, and it kind of goes out the window, and
you mean what the Astros are doing pitching?
No, yeah. So if you're looking at like a matchup type, you put your best, most comfortable, hottest hitters that you feel best with at the top of the lineup and build from there.
Okay.
I think today's lineup was pretty good.
My question is,
if it's Encarnacion or Stanton in that same spot, I don't think it matters.
My question to you is, are you putting in Encarnacion and Stanton in the lineup, or are you putting one or the other?
No, I would probably – I think Gio, with a bullpenning game, honestly, I would feel better with that than a
– You can always bring him in late in the game. You can always bring him in
late in the game. But he also makes a lot of contact throughout the season is what we've seen. And I feel better about a guy like that with different pitching styles coming in and out.
All right.
I think the reason I think that is because I think Encarnacion and Stanton could be a dynamic, like, very good matchup late in the game, potentially.
As a pinch hitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas Gio, not as much.
My question to you guys would be, what were your guys' thoughts? And I know we were at the game, so we didn't catch it right away, but A-Rod's conversation of being not so sure about the idea of moving players in and out of spots because of the confidence. So if we're making a lineup for the next game, do we leave it the same? Do we make changes? Are we affecting the confidence? What do you guys think?
So A-Rod obviously is talking about this as from his experience, right? Like, I think these are the types of moments where you have to listen to what A-Rod is saying, because he played in the major leagues for a very long time and he was successful at doing so. I do think it messes with certain people. But when you see this lineup has changed so many times, like, there's no set lineup. Like, you see LeMahieu and you see Judge at the first two, and then there's been a whole bunch of flux from there.
Yeah.
So who really cares?
Yeah.
So that's why I look at A-Rod's point. I say, okay, you're making a general point, you general son of a bitch. You scripted.
A-Rod,
and now it makes no sense to what's happening on this
team.
Here's
what that tells me. That tells me that A-Rod got in his own head, and if he was if he was batting cleanup for the whole season, and then he shows up to the park and he's hitting third or fifth, he freaks out because he's a mental midget.
Yeah,
Joe Torre dropped into
this is very telling on what A-Rod is
in the Detroit series in 2005, and that's a slap in the face. And yeah,
so
it
let
was
me
a slap in the
so
face
let me tell you,
he was over for everything.
So A-Rod had some decent analysis on there, but it had nothing to do with what this team does, because the lineup construction has been so different all the time, except for LeMahieu and Judge, who have been pretty constant at 1 and 2.
Alright,
thanks A-Rod for the contribution. Really appreciate it.
That's gonna do it for this.
I gotta go catch a train.
This episode. Scott's gotta go catch a train. Ryan's gonna go get drunk at Billy's. And I'm gonna go home and sleep. Alright, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow after game 6.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.